Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 128 event, which takes place in Atlantic City, New Jersey. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we had no premium bets for UFC on Fox 29, but we did go 2-0 for plus 2.25 units on our free bets on John Moraga and a parlay of Muslim Salikov with Israel Adesanya. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 128 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a welterweight contest between Tony Martin, who is 12-4, and Keita Nakamura, who is 33-8-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Martin opens minus 175, the comeback on Nakamura plus 135. Now looking over to our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu. Currently at betdsi, it's Martin minus 265, the comeback on Nakamura is at plus 215. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, more action coming in Tony Martin's way. Not really that surprised. I mean, this should be a good fight for Martin if he fights smart, his cardio lasts, and he is moving up to welterweight, so I think not cutting weight should actually help his conditioning, and he's improved on that end. I got to give him credit. I mean, that was one of the worst parts about Tony Martin's game, in my opinion, was his conditioning and then, of course, his chin and his IQ at times. But it seems like he's hitting his groove as of late. I know he's coming off a split decision loss to Aubin Mercier, which was a pretty good fight and a respectable loss. I mean, needless to say, especially off how Mercier looked in his last fight. But before that, he rattled off some really good wins over Johnny Case, Alex White. So he's definitely improved his overall skill set, his conditioning, even his fight IQ. I think everything about Martin's game has gotten better, which is a good thing because the guy is definitely a talented fighter. So at welterweight, I don't think he's going to be undersized at all. I mean, he's still fairly tall. He's going to fill out his frame nicely at 170 pounds. He's not going to, I think, be the weaker man here, so it should be interesting, even though Nakamura is a fairly strong guy at welterweight in his own right, and he's a skilled fighter. I mean, Nakamura, in my opinion, has always been known for his grinding style, his grappling style as well, but I'll tell you what, on the feet, he's getting better, and he's improved throughout the years. He's been around for a long time, and he's really gotten his striking to the point where it can be effective as well, so Nakamura's rounding out his game, but he's in it for a battle here, and obviously, the early action coming in on Martin indicates that Martin should probably get the W here. And I think it is right. I'm going to pick Martin to win this fight, but it should be a good battle, back and forth type of battle. I just think that Martin kind of edges Nakamura out on the feet. I think Martin should be the better wrestler of the two. The only issue I have is maybe Martin making a mistake on the floor. If Nakamura is able to take his back or in a transition or something of that nature, I could see Nakamura maybe ending it that way. So I don't necessarily agree with quite where the number is right now. I think we need to give Nakamura a little bit more respect than the current line indicates, but at the same time, it's hard for me to pick Nakamura in this spot as well. So my pick is Tony Martin. I think he edges out Nakamura and gets the W here.
And I'm going to have to agree. Tony Martin moving up to welterweight, I don't think that'll be too much of an issue for him. He was a massive lightweight, and hopefully without having to cut as much weight, he'll be able to add a little bit of muscle and be very competitive in this division. I mean, with his statistics, the measurables, he's an inch taller than Nakamura, same reach, and his legs are an inch longer. So I think he'll fit right in at 170 pounds. Martin has the better striking than Nakamura. He debuted a very nice jab that he's been working on with Mark Delagrati, and I think that that will make him very competitive in the stand-up against fighters in this division. And then, obviously, Martin's bread and butter throughout his career in the UFC has been the takedowns, top position, and then just a suffocating top control game when he does get there looking for the fight-ending submissions. and he is nasty with arm attacks. I can see him getting a Kimura or something on Nakamura and maybe forcing a tab. I mean, just by pure strength alone. But the bread and butter for this fight with Tony Martin is probably going to be the jab. If he can really just keep pumping that jab in Nakamura's face, he's going to have some success. Nakamura is a decent enough striker, but Martin should be able to keep him at bay with the jab, and that could set up some power strikes, and then obviously it could set up takedowns. Nakamura is much better when he's offensively grappling than when he's off of his back. So I think Tony Martin should be in pretty good shape here. My other big issue is Martin does have a history of cardio issues, although he hasn't been nearly as bad with them in recent fights. But if he does slow down, Nakamura can pounce on that. We've seen Nakamura pick up some late finishes in fights. So Martin will have to be on his game the entire fight, especially if this does go to decision. So my pick's going to be Martin, but just hopefully he does not slow down. And I think that he does have a pretty good welterweight debut here. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Merib Dvalishvili, who is 7-3, taking on Ricky Simone, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Simone opens -245, Dvalishvili at +175. Line margins have tightened up and it's dropped. Right now it's Simone -165, the comeback on Dvalishvili at +135 over at BetDSI. So the opening number at +175 was definitely off. I think the people that hopped on that price and it dropped down to where it is now, +135. I think you guys are on probably on the right track, at least where the value was. This should be a good fight. It's going to be a competitive fight. Simone, you got to give the guy a lot of respect. I mean, if you look at his background, the guy has been fighting against decent competition throughout his career, outside of the UFC as well. Obviously, this is his official UFC debut, but he did fight on the Contender Series, Dana White's Contender Series against Freelo, and he got a win there. It was a close competitive fight, but he deserved to get that nod there. And then, of course, fighting Camus in LFA not long ago, Camus, a UFC vet, he could really realistically still be on the roster. I mean, the guy had success in the UFC, so that was a solid win for him as well. Even dating all the way back to his 2016 loss in Titan 37, he was actually dominating that fight. He was winning that fight and then got caught and choked out quickly. So even his lone loss in the last few years that's on his resume here was a pretty good performance by him. He was looking good in that fight before he got clipped and then choked out. So Simone is legit. He's got that wrestling background. He can take people down. He can control the tempo of the fight. His striking, he's got fast hands. You know, he's able to move in and out quickly as well. He's got some accuracy. He's got a little bit of power in his hands. He's got a jiu-jitsu game. So Simone is a very, very talented guy in the bantamweight division, a nice addition to the roster. And again, he's facing a guy in Dvalishvili here that is going to be a very tough out as well. In my opinion, Dvalishvili won his first UFC debut fight against Saints. It was a close fight. I thought it should have went to him, but it was close enough where the judges, you could make a case, I guess, for either guy in a way. But again, I would have definitely scored for Dvalishvili in that fight. I think his pressure, the grinding style that he has, his wrestling is very impressive because Saints is not an easy guy to take down and manhandle like Dvalishvili did. So that's a big indicator there, what kind of power and what kind of grinding style this guy has. He has a really good jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. And then on the feet, he's a little sloppy at times, a little aggressive and unorthodox at times, but he can be effective. He's got some power. You have to respect that as well. So he goes 110 miles an hour. He comes at you nonstop, and I think that kind of pressure is going to be tough for Simone to handle. Now, Simone is a very talented fighter. He'll adapt, and he'll challenge Dvalishvili throughout the whole fight. But I think what we're going to see here is just a back-and-forth battle. Simone is probably going to be the cleaner striker, maybe landing the cleaner shots, but Dvalishvili is going to be the one pushing the pace, grinding him out a little bit more, maybe gets a takedown or two along the way, and just kind of controls the tempo of the fight. So I think this fight probably does hit the scorecards, and if it does, I see Dvalishvili winning and getting his first official W in the UFC. Should be a war, should be a battle. I'm looking forward to this fight. I'm glad they kind of matched it this way because it should be a barn burner. So the pick is Dvalishvili to get the W here.
This is a bit of a tricky fight because we're never sure which Ricky Simone is going to show up. When he fought on the Tuesday Night Contender Series, I mean, it was not that impressive a performance. I mean, they didn't call him back right away. But then he goes outside the UFC and picks up a couple wins, one over a UFC veteran in Chico Camus, and then he looked absolutely dominant in his last performance, just crushing his opponent, defending his belt. So I think if that version of Ricky Simone shows up, then he's got a pretty good shot of winning this fight. But if the Ricky Simone shows up that got the split decision on the Tuesday Night Contender Series, or even the one that beat Camus, because in that fight, I mean, Simone slowed down drastically. I can see him having some trouble here. I mean, Dvalishvili is a lot better than he showed in the UFC debut. I mean, even in that debut, he looked pretty good. He got some takedowns against a very strong grappler, and just ended up losing a close competitive fight. And against Simone, if Dvalishvili can get the takedowns, he's going to be in really good shape. If he can't, then I can see Simone having some success on the feet and potentially winning. So this fight will boil down to Simone's conditioning and Dvalishvili's takedowns, and if he can do something with those takedowns, because, you know, it's not just a given that you're going to win a round if you just get a takedown and don't do anything with it. Dvalishvili was surprisingly ineffective with ground and pound in his last fight, so I'm a little concerned about that, but I think that he's going to be a little bit more aggressive this time around. So I think Dvalishvili is a little upset at himself that he ended up losing his UFC debut. And I think that this time around, he's going to be more aggressive. And I think that he'll be just able to outmuscle and outwork Simone with that grappling and wear him out a little bit. So my pick is going to be Dvalishvili. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims. We have Leslie Smith, who is 10-7-1, taking on Aspen Ladd, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Ladd opened -265, the comeback on Smith +185, another spot where the line plummeted. Right now it's Ladd -150, the comeback on Smith is +120. So needless to say, early action came in on the underdog on Leslie Smith. And line margins have tightened up, of course, as well. Now, there will be some action coming back in Ladd's way, so we might see the line climb back up a little bit, because Ladd is obviously the prospect, the undefeated fighter coming in here at 135 pounds, the more popular fighter, the more marketable fighter. Leslie Smith has been a warrior throughout her career. I mean, she's always been a very solid fighter, very tough out. You know what she brings to the table. I mean, she always comes to fight. She puts a lot of pressure on her opponent. She has a solid wrestling base in a lot of ways. She can get put on her back and controlled by other wrestlers, of course. Not easy to hold her there. And then she has jiu-jitsu. She doesn't use it often, but obviously she's a Gracie-trained fighter as well, so she has jiu-jitsu in her back pocket as well. But her style is in-your-face, push, just put the hands on you, clinch up with you, drop some knees, whatever she could do to just win the fight. She's relentless in that aspect. And that's what's going to make her a tough fight for Ladd here as well. And that's why all the people early on were gobbling up that plus money, from +185 all the way down now, like I said, to +120. But that being said, I still have to give some advantages in this fight to Ladd. I think she's the more, pure puncher, meaning she's a little bit cleaner with her strikes. I think she's a little slow though, and that could be obviously to Smith's benefit, but I think she's going to be landing the cleaner punches. She's going to be landing a little bit more accurate, as well. And I think she's going to have a little bit more power behind her punches. As Smith does tend to wear, some punishment on her face. She gets busted up. I mean, if we've seen Jessica Eye kind of break open her ear, and it caused the fight to stop there, but she gets her face marked up. She's been cut before in fights as well. I think Ladd can actually bust her up on the feet, even if she's not landing as frequently as Smith. I think she could do a little bit more damage along the way. And then the wild card, of course, is Ladd likes to get the fight to the ground and grind people out. And once she's on top, she drops some nasty ground and pound. She looks to finish you, really. I mean, if it's a submission, if it's ground and pound, it's position, whatever the case may be, she's a finisher. And most of it takes place on the ground with Ladd. So if she gets top position on Leslie Smith, she's going to have to work on keeping her there and then dropping some punishment as well. I think she's going to be able to do some of that. So for me, again, I understand where the early action came in at +185, but where it stands now, I'm still leaning towards Ladd. I think that she is the better fighter here overall. She's going to be a little bit cleaner. She's going to be a little bit more effective. Now, if it hits the scorecards, it's going to be a close one. And the state of MMA judging, as we always say, you never know which way they're going to go. So I see it being a split decision type of fight, but I still lean a little bit more towards Ladd. I think, again, she's just the better fighter. And in my opinion, the UFC's kind of setting Leslie Smith up for the kill here. Now, will it work? Not really sure, because this is a winnable fight for Smith. If she fights right and she pushes that pace, I could see her pulling it off on the cards. But I still think that the UFC is kind of floating her in here to get beat and get a respectable win for Ladd's resume here. And I think it probably works out that way. So my pick is Ladd. I think she's just going to be a little bit better than Smith in this fight.
And I'm going to disagree here. I just think that Aspen Ladd, I was not very impressed in her UFC debut. I mean, she took on Pudilova, and Pudilova put the pressure on her in the first round and was actually able to win the first round against her. Now, obviously, Ladd settled in, got a takedown, and then dominated Pudilova on the ground, picked up a TKO victory in the second round. In the second round, she looked pretty good. But will she be able to do that against Leslie Smith? And I'm not quite convinced. Smith is going to be the longer, taller fighter. She's the much more active striker. So on the feet, Ladd is a little bit slow and plodding, and she's susceptible to a fighter that throws at a high rate like Smith and puts a lot of pressure on you like Smith does. Now, maybe Aspen Ladd has a little bit more power, but I don't see her hurting Leslie Smith. Leslie Smith's tough as nails. I mean, the only person that's ever hurt her was Cyborg. And I mean, Cyborg hurts everybody if she really wants to. So, on the feet, I think Leslie Smith doesn't just beat Aspen Ladd, but she could dominate her. Now clearly Aspen Ladd's biggest strength is getting fights to the floor, getting top position, getting ground and pound in, and looking for the finish. If that happens, I can see, Ladd having some success. Smith doesn't have the most amazing takedown defense at 62%. But it's not half bad. I mean, the only person that was able to get her down repeatedly was Rin Nakai, and Smith actually ended up winning that fight. So I think Smith is in a decent enough position in this fight to, as long as she can stuff some takedowns or at least get back up if she does get taken down, then Smith is going to be in a really good spot. But if Ladd can get the takedowns and keep Smith down and land some punches along the way, then maybe she does win this fight. But I'm a believer in Leslie Smith's pace and aggression, and I think that she can really do some damage on Aspen Ladd on the feet whenever this fight is standing. And she's going to make Ladd, if she can control distance pretty well, I mean, it's going to be a lot more difficult for Ladd to get those takedowns. So I'm leaning towards Smith. I'm not crazy confident about it, but I think that she can really fluster Aspen Ladd, especially after seeing how much trouble Ladd had against Pudilova on the feet. So my pick is going to be Leslie Smith. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a light heavyweight contest between Corey Anderson, who is 10-4, and Patrick Cummins, who is also 10-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Cummins opens minus 175, Anderson plus 145. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 125, Anderson. Cummins is at plus 105, so line flipped. So, again, opener on Cummins was a tad bit high, and all the action coming in a little bit more so on Anderson. Now, again, I'm sure Cummins will get some action back his way as well. I mean, this is a pick-em type of fight if I've ever seen one, because both these guys are hard to trust. I mean, they're real chinny, and that's a problem here. If these guys had chins on them, I mean, they'd be legit contenders at 205 pounds. They'd be a threat, especially how weak the 205-pound light heavyweight division is right now in the UFC roster. I mean, these guys have both outstanding wrestling bases. They have some power on the feet as well. Decent fight IQ overall and decent conditioning. Well, at least Cummins, I think you can say, has a little bit better conditioning. Anderson does tend to fade at times as well. And it's cost him, but again, they're both chinny. So it's who lands first kind of situation here, because if the wrestling neutralizes each other out, which I think it will for the most part, then it is whose chin's going to hold up more. I think I've been more impressed, honestly, overall with Cummins as of late. I think he's improved more. He's getting more confidence. He showed a lot of heart. He doesn't want to lose. So even if he gets clipped, he's the type of fighter that just tries his best to hang in there and then, survive and conquer, really, is what he's been doing recently. So I think that he is a little bit better in the wrestling, realm of things as well. So Anderson, I think, is the sharper striker. He's a better striker. He flows a little bit better with his boxing. And he can have a little bit more success for sure. So Cummins has to be careful, especially early on in this fight. But I think Cummins can deliver some punishment as well. And like I said, if it does turn into a wrestling battle, I think Cummins does have a little bit better wrestling as well. So I'm not confident here either way. I mean, it's hard to be with these chins. Now, the majority of the bettors out there seem to think Anderson has this fight won. I guess I'll go against the grain and I'll side with Cummins here, but again, it can't be a confident pick at all. But I just think that what we've seen of him lately compared to what we've seen from Anderson, it's hard not to like the progress and the heart that Cummins brings to the table compared to Anderson. So I'll go with him, but again, not a confident pick.
And I am a little bit more confident here in Cummins. Corey Anderson and Cummins are similar fighters with decent enough striking, but not very good chins, not a ton of power on the feet, but excellent wrestling, excellent top control, and pretty good ground and pound, both of them. So what this fight boils down to is I expect that the stand-up will be competitive, but I don't think either guy will land anything really significant, and I think Patrick Cummins is the better wrestler of the two, so if he wants to, and he should, he will shoot in for a takedown, and I think he can put Corey Anderson on his back, and I think he can keep him there, and I think that he can land some good, solid ground and pound. And honestly, on the feet, Cummins isn't half bad. Now, Anderson fights a little bit longer with a slight reach advantage, so he might be able to keep Cummins at the end of some of his strikes, but Cummins' stand-up has actually improved a bit in his, I would say, even going back to the Nogueira fight where he actually got clipped, but I mean, he was looking pretty good on the feet there too. I mean, he's put some time in. So, I think I like the heart of Patrick Cummins. He can come back when he's hurt. And, he's a guy that, I can count on a little bit. I mean, clearly, against guys that can stop takedowns and have heavy hands, Cummins will be in trouble, but I don't think Corey Anderson is that dangerous standing. So, Cummins should be in pretty good shape here, and I think that he does pull out the victory, although both of these guys are, again, very evenly matched. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Sayar Bahadurzadeh, who is 23-6-1, taking on Lewin Chagas, who is 15-2-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Bahadurzadeh opens -180. The comeback on Chagas +140. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Chagas actually the slight favorite -120. Bahadurzadeh is at -110. So across the board at the Donbass screen, looks like it's exactly a pick'em in most places as well. So -120, -115, -110, a pick'em type of fight really is what you're getting here. And it is a pick'em type of fight. So those guys that came in early, the bettors out there that took +140 on Chagas, I take my hat off to you because I think you did get a little bit of value for sure. This is a very interesting fight. Bahadurzadeh is a very dangerous fighter. I mean, it's unfortunate that we haven't seen a lot of him in the UFC octagon since he's made his debut. He's been, you know, riddled with injuries or whatnot as well. So he hasn't been fighting consistently, but his last fight, he stepped up to middleweight and actually got a W against Wilkinson, an undefeated fighter at that time. But more of a grappling based fighter, of course, but Bahadurzadeh is just such a dangerous fighter. He's got decent takedown defense overall, and he's got bricks in his hands. I mean, the guy has devastating punching power. He's aggressive. He's relentless. He's got that killer instinct. He goes for it. So he is definitely one of the most dangerous guys that you, can face in the welterweight division. And he's been, I mean, like I said, we just haven't had a lot of that opportunity to see him perform. And the guys that he's lost against thus far, in his UFC career have been able to put him on the ground and just kind of grind him out and control him a little bit more. Well, this isn't really Chagas's typical game plan. So Bahadurzadeh could definitely have a little bit of success because he should get a guy that's willing to stand and bang with him. But that might cost him because Bahadurzada is now 34 years old. Chagas is 10 years younger. And Bahadurzada is actually the type of fighter that's taken a lot of punishment throughout his career. I mean, he's had, injuries that I just stated. That's what's keeping him from fighting consistently. And he's the type of fighter that's so tough that he just absorbs the punishment. So I think at age 34, fighting a young gun like Chagas that has a lot of punching power as well, you got to be careful here. And I think that he needs to definitely defend, and his defense has to be better than it normally is in this situation fighting Chagas. Getting into Chagas a little bit more, I'll tell you what, the guy, again, for 24 years old, he's a young gun. He's made some waves in the UFC thus far. He's had a little bit of a roller coaster ride overall, because I'm saying that. I mean, he had a pretty impressive debut against Moraes. It ended up being a split draw. Back set up, though, with a pretty good performance against Eric Silva, but then as the fight progressed, he got tired. He gassed out, and Eric Silva took advantage and choked him out, which is a little bit surprising. I thought he was actually going to win that fight. But then he rebounded well against Walhead. And Walhead has definitely always been a pretty dangerous striker, a solid striker, and he was able to hurt Walhead and get him out of there by submission. So that was impressive as well. And I think we're only starting to see Chagas get a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more confident. And he even stated after his Walhead win that he needs to work on the conditioning. He has kind of address that a little bit, and he's going to keep on continuing to work on those areas to become that fighter that he could be, because he's got so much talent, so much potential. So what we're going to see here is probably a strike fest. I mean, both these guys like to stand and bang. I think Chagas is a little bit cleaner, a little bit more technical. He switches stances a lot, so I think his defense is actually going to be a little bit better as well. But Bahadurzada is one of those guys that, man, all it takes sometimes is just one clean punch to land, and you could be in some serious trouble with this guy. So a pick'em fight is a fair spot for this. You could realistically see it going either way. I think Chagas might be able to make it in a takedown or two, even though he's more well-known for his striking. He does have some submissions to go along with that as well. He is a little bit more of the complete fighter. If his gas tank does hold, I think he will mix in some takedowns, and he will probably win the striking exchanges on the feet as well. So I slightly lean towards Chagas in this fight, but it should be a fan-friendly type of fight, no doubt about it. These guys like to come and bang, and they're tough as nails as well. So looking forward to this fight, I'm going to slightly lean Chagas' way. I think he probably pulls this one out.
Yeah, the biggest issue for me is the fact that Sayar has fought now twice since about 2013. I mean, it's just such a long layoffs for him. And the fact that Chagas is a guy that is 10 years younger than him and is, I would say, improving drastically. I mean, Chagas looked like a world beater in his fight against Jimmy Walhead. Now, obviously, Bahadurzada is not Jimmy Walhead, but Chagas is probably better now than he was when he fought Jimmy Walhead. And Bahadurzada fought at middleweight the last time we saw him, because it had been a while since he'd competed, and he just hadn't made the cut down to welterweight, really, and he wanted to fight anyway. And we'll see how he handles dropping back down to welterweight. Against Chagas, I think Bahadurzada will have a power advantage, and he might have a conditioning advantage. We've seen Bahadurzada pull out some victories in the late second round, in the third round. So even though he's had some very impressive quick knockouts in his career, he still does have the conditioning typically to win fights that some guys might not be able to pull out, because his conditioning is usually on point. He paces himself pretty well. Chagas, on the other hand, does not pace himself that well all the time. He gets a little emotional at times. He starts really strong, and he can slow down. I mean, we saw that when he got finished in the third round against Eric Silva. He slowed down a little bit against Sergio Moraes. So if he slows down, even if he's winning, Bahadurzada has the power to put him away at any point, even if it's late in the third round. So that is a big concern for me here, but Chagas should have the grappling edge. I think on the feet, he will have the activity edge. I think that he will throw a little bit more often. Potentially that could keep Bahadurzada on his heels on the feet. And if this fight does go to the floor, and I do expect it to, Chagas should be able to get top position and either drop down some punches or work for submissions. Now, Bahadurzada is not, completely clueless on the ground, but that is how he lost his last fight. He got out-grappled by John Howard, of all people. Just repeatedly took him down and kept him down. And I think Chagas could be able to replicate that success. So if he can put Bahadurzada on his back, it's a lot more difficult to eat a big punch if you got your opponent on the ground. So I think Chagas is able to do that. I think he does avoid a late fall off, and I think he does walk away with a decision. But Bahadurzada's power is something that could change this fight at any moment. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Magomed Bibulatov, who is 14-1, taking on Ulka Sasaki, who is 25-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Bibulatov opened -300. The comeback on Sasaki at +220. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's currently Bibulatov -370. The comeback on Sasaki +290. So more action come in. Bibulatov's away. Not really a surprise. I mean, the guy's a hype train. I mean, before he made his UFC debut, of course, he's a former Titan fighting champion. There was a lot of people looking forward to this guy fighting in the UFC, and he's a nice addition, of course, to the flyweight roster. There's no doubt. I mean, this guy can instantly make himself in contender status if he gets on a roll. But unfortunately for him, he got derailed right away in his debut, getting knocked out by Moraga. So he needs to redeem himself here, and he's got a winnable opponent in front of him in Sasaki. Now, Sasaki's not bad. I don't want to disrespect him here, but I understand why the early action coming in Bibulatov's way. Sasaki is more of a grappling-based fighter. He's long for the division. His stand-up is getting better. He's getting a little bit more confident compared to what we've seen early on from Sasaki on the feet in the UFC. So he's taking a little bit more risks. He's a little bit more dangerous, but make no mistake, Sasaki's best attribute is definitely the ground, and he's going to want to play that ground game here with Bibulatov. But the problem is, overall, Bibulatov is a grinding type of wrestler with some power on the feet as well. His submission defense so far has looked pretty good. It's going to be tested here against Sasaki because Bibulatov is probably going to get top position on the ground here. And Sasaki, with those long limbs, is going to be throwing up arm bars, triangles, transitions, reversals, all sorts of stuff. So I think Bibulatov definitely has to be cautious playing the ground game with Sasaki, because really, in my opinion, here in this fight, that's the only path to victory for Sasaki, is maybe catching Bibulatov by submission, maybe taking his back and sinking into choke. If Sasaki gets your back, he's one of the guys that can definitely put most people out. If he's on your back, he sinks in with that technique. That rear naked choke is fairly easy for him to get. It doesn't matter how well you defend at times. I mean, he's got it down pat. So Bibulatov needs to avoid Sasaki on his back. I think he can avoid getting caught up in a triangle choke or anything like that. And I think on the feet, he is the more powerful striker, even though he's going to be at a reach discrepancy here. I think he's still going to be more effective on the feet. So I think he'll dictate where the fight takes place. He's a solid favorite for a reason, and I think he probably comes through and gets back on track, and then hopefully strings together a few wins before we consider him a title contender, and you know, he earns that spot. So we'll see where he goes from here, but I do think Bibulatov comes away with the W here.
And I'm going to go Bibulatov as well. I just think he's the better athlete. I think he's the better wrestler. I think his grappling is just as good as Sasaki's, and his striking should be much better. Clearly, there's some answers that we need to see out of Bibulatov coming off of his first loss. He got knocked out by Moraga. How is he going to respond to that? Is he going to be passive, or is he going to be motivated? So that's a big question that needs answered. And on the ground, Sasaki, while he does not have the wrestling that Bibulatov does, he does have just that crazy length that he can, find opportunities for submissions. Sasaki is 5 inches taller than Bibulatov. He's going to have 5 inches in reach, and he's going to have 6 inches in leg reach. So, I mean, triangle chokes, I mean, you name it. If Sasaki can get that length and leverage working, he might be able to catch Bibulatov with something. I would say, honestly, even though Bibulatov is coming off of a fight where he got, battered on the feet, the stand-up is going to be the safest place for him. He is a solid striker, aggressive, and Sasaki does not really have much power whatsoever. So if Bibulatov can just wade forward and outland Sasaki, which he should be able to do, then he's going to be in good shape. And if he gets takedowns, he should be in good shape. It's just he needs to be a little bit careful with Sasaki's grappling. But I don't think Babulatov gets submitted. I don't think he gets knocked out. I think he can either grind this out and win a decision or maybe be able to wear Sasaki down and even get a stoppage victory along the way. He just has to be a little bit cautious, again, with Sasaki's crafty grappling because he has been prone to pulling off some crazy submissions. I mean, it was an impressive upset he pulled off over Justin Scoggins. So that's always something you got to keep in the back of your head. But my pick is going to be Babulatov. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the welterweight division, we have Ryan LaFlair, who is 13-2, taking on Alex Garcia, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
LaFlair opens -195, Garcia +155. Right now looking over at BetDSI, currently it's LaFlair -156, the comeback on Garcia +126. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, more action coming in Garcia's way. This is definitely an interesting fight. I mean, not an easy one. Both these guys have wrestling backgrounds. Both these guys like to ground fights out, take people down, utilize some ground and pound. Obviously, LaFlair has a better submission game overall. And both these guys have decent stand-up. I mean, Garcia, I think that's his path to victory here, is keeping the fight upright, trying to sprawl brawl, because LaFlair, you know, is going to be looking for a takedown, especially since he's coming off of a devastating knockout loss, the first knockout loss of his career. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's gun shy on the feet here, especially with an explosive, powerful fighter like Garcia here. Now, it is LaFlair's first knockout loss, but he has been clipped in past fights and he's been rocked and his chin has been a little bit sketchy, even though, you know, like I said, he finally suffered his first knockout loss. So that's one thing to kind of keep an eye out on, because LaFlair is, he's a warrior. He's a great fighter. I think he's underrated. He's one of the better fighters at 170 pounds, especially if his chin holds, and it typically does. I mean, he's able to grind people out. His stand-up game, he's got some decent kicking to go along with some solid boxing as well, and he's got some power in the feet. He's a tad bit slow, especially in this matchup compared to Garcia. I think that's where Garcia is going to have the advantages, is his speed, his boxing, and he does throw with some serious intent. He's going to throw with power, and especially now that LaFlair's coming off this knockout loss, Garcia is going to be looking to test that chin for sure. Make no mistake, though, Garcia has a suspect chin in his own right. He's been knocked out a couple times in the past before as well. He's been rocked and wobbled in more fights than that as well. So it's kind of another situation where you got the battle of the chins and a lot of similar skill sets that are matching up against each other here, with both guys being wrestlers and all the things that I just stated. So to me, it's going to come down to whether LaFlair can survive and not get clipped by the speedy punches and powerful punches of Garcia. If he can, he probably ends up controlling and out grinding Garcia along the way. I think if this fight hits the ground, it's LaFlair getting top position, and he's just a slicker grappler overall than Garcia. So I think LaFlair, his conditioning overall is a little bit better as well. Garcia has had some cardio issues in the past that have hindered him. It seems like he is getting a little bit better. He's another one of these cases that through hard work, through confidence, everything, they know their weaknesses and it has improved in that area. But still, I mean, this is the type of fight that's going to really test his cardio, because LaFlair is going to be looking to grind him out. And typically speaking, that's what Garcia gets worn out. And most people, in most cases, you get worn out when somebody's trying to get you down and you're trying to fight it off. So this is going to be a test for both guys. Can LaFlair's chin survive? If so, I think he wins. So my pick is LaFlair. I think we'll see him get back on track here. And again, if he can avoid that big knockout punch, I think he probably gets the win and maybe even finishes Garcia along the way. So I do think LaFlair gets a W here.
And I'm going to agree. Ryan LaFlair just overall is the better fighter than Alex Garcia. The big issue with LaFlair has been he doesn't have the strongest chin. And that's been since his second fight in the UFC, when he, you know, got damaged late by Santiago Ponzinibbio. So that's always been something LaFlair has to be cautious of. It caught up to him in that last fight when he got knocked out in the second round by Alex Oliveira. So I'm definitely concerned about that, because Alex Garcia hits just as hard, if not harder, than Oliveira. And if he can connect, then LaFlair will be in big, big trouble. That being said, LaFlair has excellent takedowns. He is a competent striker, a better overall striker than Garcia. Garcia more just wings his punches. and LaFleur has much better conditioning. So as long as LaFleur can protect that chin, then I think he's going to be in pretty good shape. Garcia has pretty good takedowns himself, but I don't think he'll be able to consistently shoot in for a double leg and then not, and even if he gets LaFleur down, I don't think he keeps him down. And I think that that'll be very taxing on Garcia's conditioning. And, with him, it's just like he has that meter where, you know, it's just slowly draining throughout the fight. And I would say by, if Garcia has not knocked out LaFleur by the midway point of the second round, he's not going to, and he's going to lose a decision. So, my pick is going to be Ryan LaFleur. I think he survives Garcia's power, and I think that he at least wins a decision, if not gets a late stoppage. Now, moving on to the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have a lightweight contest between Jim Miller, who is 28-11 with one no contest, and Dan Hooker, who is 16-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hooker minus 270. The comeback Miller plus 190. That was the opener. Right now, looking over at betdsi.eu, it is currently with Hooker at minus 355. The comeback on Miller plus 275. So needless to say, action coming in Hooker's way. I'll tell you what, man, he's looked really good. I do get why people are jumping on the Hooker bandwagon here. Since he's moved up to 155 pounds, I mean, this is one of those reverse cases that, going up a weight class has benefited him greatly. I mean, the guys look really good. Now, his last loss at featherweight was obviously to Jason Knight. And then that fight, I'm going to mention this early, he lost a fight, a lot of it, because Jason Knight was able to take him down and control him a little bit there. But since he bumped up to lightweight, I mean, he didn't have to face that. He hasn't had to face it with Ross Pearson. Ross Pearson, as we all know, is more of a striking-based fighter. DeCasey, last time, his last win, that he choked him out late in that fight. I mean, he's not really known for his takedown game. He's more of a striking-based fighter as well. So there's a test here for Hooker at lightweight, because Miller, even though he's kind of a shell of himself, he's not the prime Miller that was once a lightweight contender and pretty much was always ranked in the top five of the division. Obviously, you know, through the years, Miller, with his health issues, everything that we've stated, you know, he's on the decline. He's 34 years old, and in fight years, he's way beyond that. Even though he's put on a nice little run, and it looks like he kind of rejuvenated his career a little bit, you still don't see quite the grinder, the stylistic fighter that he once was. I mean, he's definitely taken a step back from that. I mean, I think Miller at one point was one of the better wrestlers in the weight class, and he needs to do that. He needs to kind of go back to that wrestling-based style against Hooker. Hooker's going to have a lot of advantages here on the feet. He's going to have the length. He's going to have the power. He's definitely the better striker, even though Miller's not bad. I mean, he does have some nice boxing. He has a nice body kick he can throw at you as well. So Miller is capable for being a wrestling grappling based fighter of holding his own on the feet in most cases. But here again, with the disadvantages being that reach, and Hooker's the better striker, the cleaner striker in this spot here, I think Miller's not going to want to play that game. And especially with his chin not getting any better, not getting any younger, and Hooker being on the, you know, the momentum, everything being on confidence on point right now for Hooker, I think that's a dangerous spot for Miller. So I am going to pick Hooker to win. I think that he is probably going to outpoint Miller, but a glaring issue here to me is that Hooker is only 1-5 in his career when it hits the scorecards. And if Miller implements a wrestle heavy attack here, even though if Hooker is able to sprawl brawl and stuff some of the takedowns, if Miller gets a few, Miller's a great grappler. I think he can out grapple Hooker on the ground here. So that's why I don't necessarily agree with where the line currently is. I think it's a tad bit too high. I do think that Hooker probably gets a W here, but there could be some value on Jim Miller here. I mean, it all depends on, again, which Miller shows up, if he's going to put that kind of pressure on, if he's going to try to use a grapple heavy, wrestling heavy kind of game plan to attack Hooker here. I think that's his path to victory. And again, when it hits the scorecards, Hooker is 1-5 in those fights. So if Miller can survive and get this to the cards, it could get interesting. So caution out there for those of you guys that are betting this, because Miller is tough. He's not easy to stop. He's not easy to finish. We've seen that time and time again. Even at age 34 and on the decline that I'm mentioning, he's still not an easy guy to get rid of. I mean, he's seen it all. He's been in there with the best of the best. So this is going to be a test for Hooker for sure. So my pick is Hooker. I don't necessarily agree with a high line though. And I think you guys need to be careful if you're going to be putting Hooker in parlays and laying that kind of chalk. Just be cautious out there.
And I'm going to go Hooker as well. Jim Miller is dangerous. His stand-up is not terrible. I mean, he's pretty active on the feet, and he might be able to outpoint Hooker, although Hooker does have more power. And on the ground, I would say Hooker is decent from top control, but Miller clearly has the wrestling edge and the grappling edge. So this could be a trap fight, especially since it's in Miller's backyard in New Jersey. That's where he's from. That's where he trains out of. So, if Hooker is taking this fight lightly, then Jim Miller can absolutely win this fight. He has a very sneaky good jiu-jitsu game, great arm bars and leg locks if he wants to fall back to that. My main issue with Miller is, his durability isn't nearly what it once was. He can get hurt in fights and finished. For a while, people were always saying, you know, you can only ever beat Miller by decision. He's never been stopped. Then he finally got stopped. And then like, well, he's never been submitted. Then he got submitted. So, you know, he's been knocked out. He's been submitted in the UFC. Now he's taken a bit of damage over this, latter stage of his career. I didn't think he looked that great in the fight against Anthony Pettis, especially since Pettis hasn't been himself, for the last couple years now. So, this is definitely a winnable fight for Dan Hooker, even though I would say Miller has a little bit better technique than Hooker. Hooker has the youthful exuberance. He has the power. He has the measurables. He's got, you know, 4 inches in reach, 4 inches in height. So, I think Hooker has a very good chance of pulling this one out. And the longer it goes, the better it'll be for Hooker because, Jim Miller has not had very good conditioning in the latter stages of his career. So we've seen him slow down in fights and potentially get finished late or give up opportunities for his opponent to take advantage of. So I think Dan Hooker can potentially get a late second round or third round stoppage in this fight, and he's going to be my pick. So I also, like Nick, don't agree with the exorbitant betting line in Hooker's favor, but I do think that he should win this fight. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Aljamain Sterling, who is 14-3, taking on Brett Johns, who is 15-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Johns opens minus 150 to come back on Sterling plus 110, and right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Johns minus 117, Sterling minus 113. Looking across the market, though, it is exactly one of those spots that's a pick-em in most places as well. So minus 110, it looks like, is the case either way. So exactly a pick-em fight market-wise, and basically a pick-em fight at DSI with a slight lean towards Johns. And Johns, again, did open the slight favorite here over Sterling. So that's some respect. We all know what kind of hype and what kind of respect and what kind of potential Sterling has. I know he's coming off of a devastating loss for him. I mean, nobody expected Moraes to knock him out that quick. I guess it was like a minute into the first round when he fought Marlon Moraes in his last fight that he got knocked out. He just got caught with a brutal knee. So that's typically not Sterling. I mean, he doesn't have a suspect chin really. He has been wobbled in fights though before. So that is, his defense could be a little better, but at the same time, he's a pretty tough guy. And I mean, again, I don't want to say it was a lucky knee because that's what Moraes does. He's a great striker, but at the same time, I think, he's a little bit better than that indicates. So we got to kind of throw that out the window. And his matchup here against Johns is going to be completely different. Both these guys are very similar across the board. So I think a pick'em line is fair. I mean, to say the least, because both these guys have a grappling friendly style. They like to take the fight to the floor. They're capable of beating their opponents on the feet as well. I think for Sterling, the key to this fight for him is mixing in his kicks and just being a little bit more unorthodox like he normally is, using those angles and just kind of making life a little bit miserable for Johns with his unorthodox style on the feet. And then, of course, trying to get some takedowns and maybe grab Johns and take his back, something like that. I think that's the way Sterling's going to win his fight. For Johns, I think the path to victory here is actually putting Sterling on his back, getting top control, out grappling Sterling a little bit. I don't think that these guys can submit each other unless they take each other's backs. Outside of that, I think their sub defense is awesome. I mean, we haven't seen them in some serious trouble yet, and they've faced some solid competition throughout their careers. I know more so Sterling in the UFC or whatnot, but still, I think Johns has pretty good submission defense as well. So I don't expect these guys to submit each other. I think they kind of neutralize each other out in that aspect, but I do think that Johns has better boxing. He's the more person that's going to be pushing the pace a little bit more. He's the more likely fighter to be the aggressor here. I think his boxing is going to be landing a little bit more clean and a little bit more accurate and a little bit more consistent on Sterling as well. So in my opinion, Johns gets top position more often. Johns wins the stand-up battle because of his boxing is a little bit more clean and crisp and straight. So I do give some slight advantages to Johns in this fight, but it's not going to be an easy fight. This is definitely going to be the hardest fight of Johns' career for sure. And Sterling is going to be hungry here. I mean, he's looking to rebound and get back on track. That's a devastating loss. Like I said, he was kind of looking forward to potentially earning a title shot with a, you know, rolling through a few wins here, and he got derailed. So he wants to get back on track here. So he's going to be hungry. He's going to be game. I just don't think it's going to be enough. I think Johns is the better fighter, and it probably shows here in this matchup. So competitive fight, but I'm leaning Johns.
Yeah, these fighters are virtually identical with their measurements. I mean, both Brett Johns, Aljamain Sterling come in as grappling-centric fighters with 67 inches in height, both bantamweights, 71-inch reach, 39-inch leg reach. I mean, there's not going to be much advantage for either guy in terms of anything measurable. But in terms of their skills, I would say Brett Johns is the better overall boxer. I think he can put some pressure on Sterling on the feet. Sterling is a very unorthodox striker. I don't think he's that effective. And you do have to remember that he is coming off of a brutal, brutal knockout loss to Marlon Moraes. So that is something that has to be in the back of his head a little bit. And honestly, Brett Johns might be just as good of a grappler and wrestler as Sterling as well. So where's Sterling going to be able to win this fight? I mean, he has that unorthodox kicking game that might be able to score him some points. He might be able to out-grapple Johns. I mean, we're really not going to be able to know until we just see both of these guys on the canvas rolling around. And I hope that we do, because that's where this fight gets the most interesting. And I think it reminds me a little bit of Sterling against Caraway. Like, maybe Sterling can use his physical strength early and overpower Johns, but I can see Sterling tiring himself out a little bit and then Johns just taking over in this fight. So I'm not sure either guy could finish the other, but I think Brett Johns has what it takes to score points on the feet, and I think his conditioning is going to be solid enough. I think the aggression is going to be there, and combined with Sterling coming off of a just horrendous knockout loss, I think that this plays to Brett Johns' favor. He has a lot of confidence and momentum right now, and I think that he can pull off a decision victory. So Johns is going to be my pick. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have David Branch, who is 21-4, taking on Thiago Santos, who is 17-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Santos opened -185, the comeback on Branch +145. Looking over at BetDSI right now, it is currently -210. For Santos, and Branch is +165. It was a little bit higher earlier today as well, so some action coming back in on Branch. But needless to say, the early action has been bet up with Santos opening a little bit lower of a favor. So more people like Santos. Man, I'll tell you what, the guy's a beast. I mean, I've underestimated this guy time and time again. He definitely earned my respect. I mean, that Anthony Smith TKO KO win, that body kick basically is what – it wasn't even a crazy hard kick from Santos that ended up ending that fight. That's how much power this guy has, especially with his kicks. So he's dangerous. I mean, the guy has one of the most dangerous striking games in all of the middleweight division. I mean, he's got the size, he's got the power, he's got the accuracy, he's got that kind of kickboxing style. And again, highlighted by those kicks, whether it's to the leg, to the body, to the head, he is dangerous when he throws those suckers. But he does have some flaws, and the main one being the ground, for sure. And he's been defeated that way before. He makes some mistakes on the ground. It's not easy to get him there though. He's definitely put the work in and he's gotten his takedown defense to the point where it's not easy to control him. He's so big and strong and he's getting more technical in his takedown defense. So it's not easy to put him to the ground. But he does tend to make mistakes sometimes. And I mean, if you look back at the Spicely fight, Spicely was able to end that fight quick, like with the mistake that, you know, that Santos made. So against great grapplers, Santos does struggle, and Branch fits that mold, in my opinion. Now, again, does he have the submission ability that a guy like Spicely does? No, he's not that dangerous in submission skill, but Branch does have the capability of submitting people. And more times than not, his fight IQ, I like. Branch knows what he's into. He knows his opponents. He studies them well. He's going to have a smart game plan here. Outside of being a grappler, Branch obviously has a decent stand-up game to go along with it. He's got some power. If you look back at his fight against Rockhold recently, that wasn't really a bad performance from Branch. He was winning that fight up until the point where Rockhold got position on the ground and then beat him, you know, submitted him to strikes. So that's what Rockhold does, though. He could do that basically across the board to most in the middleweight division. Once he gets top position, you're in some serious trouble, whether it's ground and pound or submission game. So I could see what happened to Branch happen to most people. So I don't really count that loss as really that negative towards Branch, because he was actually looking, he was taking the fight to Luke Rockhold. He was looking good in that fight. So my point being, Santos is not going to put Branch in that position. He's not going to be that dominant on the ground, and he's not going to be able to do what Rockhold did to him. So Branch has to just be cautious of those kicks, mainly more than anything else, those knees and those kicks from Santos. And he's going to have to find his time and just kind of wait it out and get that opportunity to take the fight to the ground. And once he does get the fight to the ground, though, I think he's going to be able to wear on Santos a little bit, look for those positions that he can dominate, get some maybe ground and pound going, or even take his back and sub him. So I'm going to go against the grain here. I think Branch is just going to be a little bit too talented. Overall, he is the much better fighter, more complete fighter than Santos. Even though Santos is more dangerous on the feet, I still think that Branch is the better fighter overall. So if Branch can survive and not get caught, not get knocked out, he's going to win this fight. And I think he probably finishes Santos. So I'll go against the grain. Like I said, I'll pick the underdog here and Branch to get the W.
And I can absolutely see David Branch getting a victory here, because Tiago Santos has been submitted twice in the UFC by seasoned grapplers, and David Branch is definitely a seasoned grappler. So, I mean, if Santos is going to lose, that's probably going to be how he loses. But in open space, I mean, Tiago Santos is one of the scariest fighters on the roster at this point. He has heavy hands, quick combinations, and devastating kicks. So David Branch is going to be getting his hands full in the stand-up department. Branch is, you know, not a terrible striker. He's a composed striker. He looked pretty good against Luke Rockhold on the feet. He actually had Rockhold in some trouble early. He fought him exactly how you're supposed to fight him. Just keep Rockhold on his back foot and try to take him out. And he definitely had his moments in that fight before Rockhold turned the tides on him. But against Santos, that's definitely not the strategy he's going to want to implore. I mean, David Branch is a guy that really likes to wear down opponents. I mean, you don't become a middleweight and light heavyweight champ outside the UFC for the same promotion by being too aggressive and leaving openings. I mean, he, you know, really can grind fights down to a halt. It's not always the most entertaining, but it's been effective for him. And if he could slow this fight down, get it into the clinch, look for takedowns, then he's going to be in a good spot. I mean, Tiago Santos is not going to be able to knock David Branch out if he's got his back against the fence or if he's on his back on the ground. So I don't know if Dave Branch will be able to get a finish if he does win, but that's the path to victory. That being said, I mean, Tiago Santos is going to be landing heavy and often while this fight does take place on the feet. In Dave Branch's UFC return, he took on Christoph Jatko, and you know, that fight was on its feet for quite a while. So if this fight does stay standing, if Santos's takedown defense holds up, or if Branch is not effective in pursuing takedowns, then I can see Tiago Santos landing some nasty strikes along the way. I don't know if he'll be able to finish Branch because Branch has only ever been finished by a slam from Gerald Harris way back in the day, but at least with strikes. Then I would say, you know, Thiago Santos might be able to either get the finish, which again, Branch is tough. I don't know if he'll be able to do that, but Santos could also win a decision. Just by outpointing Branch. I expect him to get the better of Branch during stand-up exchanges, even though Santos is going to be concerned about the takedown in the back of his head. I still think that he'll be able to sit down on his punches and try to land some heavy shots along the way and look for a finish. So while David Branch does have a big edge when this fight goes to the floor, I think Santos has just as big of an edge when it starts on the feet. So Santos is going to be my pick, but I will definitely be reconsidering it if Dave Branch has success with his grappling. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Justin Willis, who is 6-1, and Chase Sherman, who is 11-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Willis opened -215, Sherman +165. Right now over at BetDSI, it is currently -355 for Willis, Sherman at +275. So again, another spot, needless to say, action coming in Willis's way. At first glance, you might not think 2-1 is that bad of a line, because Sherman is definitely not an easy out in the heavyweight division. And he's gaining some respect, gaining some popularity, gaining some fans. But if you look closer, you look at the footage and you study it a little bit, I can understand why the early action did come in on Willis. He's just the better athlete in this spot. He's just the better striker in this spot. He's the better wrestler in this spot. So his athleticism, his speed and his hands are going to do some damage probably against Sherman here in this spot. So Sherman is coming off of a knockout loss. And he's facing a guy that hits even harder than Abdul Rahimov, which got him out of there, in his last fight. So this is a dangerous fight for Sherman. I think Sherman can have success. And I think Willis, honestly, Justin Willis is a tad bit overrated. But stylistically, this is a great fight for him. Sherman is dangerous. He's got some power on the feet. Of course, you know, the ground, we haven't really seen Sherman play out on the ground too much. I mean, he's got good takedown defense, so he's been able to keep it upright. Offensively, he doesn't really look for that much either. He'd rather stand and bang, mix up his kicks and his strikes, his punches, and do some damage that way. And if Willis isn't cautious and he doesn't respect him, he could get caught himself. I mean, that's not out of the question. Willis is still raw, in my opinion, even though he's looked better and he's looking good. Again, I think he's a little bit overhyped, but styles make fights, and this stylistic matchup for Willis is definitely a good one. I think even though he's going to be as far as height, he's going to be the shorter fighter, but pure reach is actually about the same. I think they're both about 78 inches. So I think Willis, even though he's going to be the shorter fighter here, he's going to have no issues closing that gap, getting inside, and just probably putting Sherman's lights out. So Willis, I've been impressed with him so far. I think if he can continue to get better and the UFC matches him up correctly, I think Willis could, in the heavyweight division, make a run. I mean, we could see this guy ranked potentially and picking off some of the better fighters in the UFC heavyweight roster. So we'll see where Willis goes with his career, but this is definitely a good stepping stone for him to get where he wants to be. And I think Willis does win this fight, and probably by knockout.
Chase Sherman is an exciting fighter, but I wouldn't say that he is the most effective fighter in the UFC welterweight heavyweight division. Sherman, basically, when he steps in there against a guy that deserves to be ranked in the top 15, that's when Sherman runs into some trouble. He took on Shamil Abdurahimov in his last fight, and he got knocked out. He took on Walt Harris, he got knocked out. He took on Justin Ledet, he lost a one-sided decision. So Sherman does beat the guys that he's supposed to beat, but against Justin Willis, I think Willis is going to be the bigger guy. He's going to be the better athlete. I think Willis has a little bit more power in his hands. And Willis should be the better takedown artist if he does want to get this fight to the floor. So while Sherman is going to be aggressive and be looking to land some hands on the feet when it does stay standing, I think that he'll just be at a disadvantage just about everywhere. And unless he can really slow Willis down and hurt him on the feet, then I think that this is going to be a bit of a one-sided matchup. I just think Justin Willis is, has a lot more potential than Sherman. And I mean, he's already off to a good start with a 2-0 run to begin his UFC career. And this is the right step at this point. And, you know, Sherman is a bit of a gatekeeper towards, top 15 fighters. And I think that, Justin Willis has the potential to be a top 15 guy. And if you're going to be a top 15 guy, you need to be able to take out Chase Sherman. And I think Willis can. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the featherweight division, we have Frankie Edgar, who is 21-6-1, taking on Cub Swanson, who is 25-8. And this is a rematch. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Edgar opens minus 230 to come back on Swanson plus 170. Right now, over at BetDSI, the current line is minus 210 for Edgar, the comeback on Swanson plus 165. So line margins have tightened up a little bit and a little bit more action coming in Swanson's way. My question is why? Why have the rematch? I mean, it wasn't like Edgar struggled in the first fight. I know Swanson is definitely a respectable opponent. People like watching him fight, and maybe coming off of the devastating knockout loss that Edgar just suffered about a month and a half ago. That's a crazy thing here. Ortega knocked Edgar out about a month and a half ago. Edgar's right back in there. I get it. I understand. These guys, a lot of time when they do a quick turnaround after a devastating knockout loss, they just want to erase that loss. Not necessarily to the opponent that just gave it to them, but they want to get back on track. They want to get that winning feel back. So I get it. This is in New Jersey as well. I understand, but I think it's too much too soon. That's the question mark, and that's a hesitation for me here in this fight. Outside of that, I mean, stylistically, this is a tough matchup for Swanson. I mean, Edgar proved that the first time around. He was able to finish Swanson late in that fight, but outside of that, he was able to get some takedowns. I believe he was over 50%. He went like 7 out of 13 takedowns the first go around in that fight. So the ground was a key to victory for Edgar in that fight. Not that his striking's bad, because obviously Edgar's striking, his boxing's on point. He's quick. He's been in there with some awesome strikers throughout his career. So nothing that Cub throws at him is going to be any different. But that being said, coming off of a devastating knockout loss, like I said, more so than ever, Edgar's going to want to get this fight to the ground here and not play that game on the feet. So, I mean, there's not much more to say about this. I think if Swanson's able to stuff the takedowns and do a better job keeping off his back than he did last time, I think he can have success. Maybe he does have power. Maybe he lands that big bomb and puts Edgar back out and he redeems himself and gets that loss back. But outside of that, it's hard to pick him. I mean, I think really Swanson's only path to victory is landing something flush on Edgar. And if that's the case, I mean, it was just a mistake for Edgar kind of getting back in there so soon, honestly. So I don't agree with this matchup. I kind of wish that it wasn't happening this card, maybe down the road a little bit more. But again, I get it. The circumstances, Edgar wants to back in there as soon as possible. It's in Jersey. It is what it is. As our buddy Holloway would say, I guess. But my pick is Edgar. Hard not to pick the guy. But man, you know, I feel like it's just too much too soon for Edgar to get back in here. So hopefully he comes away with this victory and unscathed, and, you know, he lives to fight another day type of thing. I don't want to see Edgar get that much, you know, more punishment throughout his career. The guy's been in so many great wars. You know, it'd just be sad to see Edgar start suffering these knockout losses back to back to back. So hopefully that's not the case here and he gets the W. So my pick is Edgar to win.
The last time these two men fought, I mean, it was not even close. Edgar was just in full on wrestling mode. He repeatedly put Cub Swanson on his back, wore him down with ground and pound, and eventually found an opening for a submission. So I think, this fight will be very similar. On the feet, Swanson's always going to have a chance, especially with Edgar coming off of the first stoppage knockout loss of his career and Swanson having some heavy hands, and the fact that he is so tenacious and willing to put himself in crazy situations on the feet. But if Frankie Edgar's smart, I mean, he goes to what's tried and true here. He has great wrestling in the division. Swanson does not pose much of a threat off of his back, as we've seen. And Swanson can be submitted. We've seen him get submitted by Ortega. We've seen him get submitted earlier in his UFC run by Lamas. So, and then before we also saw him get finished by Edgar. So this isn't a 5-round fight. It's a 3-round fight. And I think the finish will be less likely unless it's Swanson hurting, Edgar on the feet. But, I do think that Edgar can get this fight to the floor and at least win a one-sided unanimous decision. So my pick is going to be Edgar, but I am a little concerned about the quick turnaround coming off of the devastating loss that knocked him out of the title contention. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening in the lightweight division. We have Edson Barboza, who is 19-5, taking on Kevin Lee, who is 16-4. Now Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Barboza opened -135, Lee -105. The line has flipped right now looking over at BetDSI. It is currently Lee -145, the comeback on Barboza +115. So again, more action coming in Lee's way. I get it. This is a tough fight. I mean, it's a pick 'em fight in my opinion as well. And line indicating that it's leaning a little bit more towards Lee's way. Mainly because of the dominant grappling that Lee has, obviously. I mean, he's got some power on the feet. We know that, but he doesn't want to play that game with Barboza. I know Barboza has a bit of a suspect chin. That's been one of his issues, throughout his career. Even the sub losses that he's had have been due to getting clipped, rocked, and then subbed. So Barboza is definitely chinny, but as of late, that chin hasn't been as much of an issue, it seems. So that's good. I mean, you hate to see somebody with that much talent offensively in the striking realm, you know, have a bad chin or whatnot, because it just, it's not good for anybody. I mean, it's not good for us to watch somebody with that much talent get put out like he has in the past. But that being said, it's not like he's horrible defensively. I'm not saying that, but he has been tested with that chin and it hasn't been a good thing. Now you could say the same thing about Lee though as well. In my opinion, Lee's been chinny. I mean, he got knocked out by a grappler before. So now Lee's chin has held up again since then, but he has been rocked in different fights as well. And this is going to be one of the best strikers as Lee's ever faced in Barboza, with the devastating leg kicks, with the pinpoint accuracy, with that devastating timing on that jump knee that Barboza has. Lee has to be very careful, but the people betting Lee are coming in because they know Lee is one of the best grapplers, one of the best wrestlers, one of the most dominant ground fighters at 155 pounds outside of Khabib. I mean, Lee is definitely top of the food chain when it comes to lightweight division and the grappling aspect of things for sure. Now, again, Lee does have some power on the feet as well, but make no mistake, he's going to want to come in here and test Barboza's takedown defense, get the fight to the ground, take his back and try to either pound him out with the dominant top control or get under that chin and sink in that rear naked choke and put him out. If Lee gets your back and he starts to get that rear naked choke going, man, I'll tell you what, it's hard to fend him off. So, I mean, you can ask Chiesa that. And of course, I mean, that's controversial, but that being said, Lee gets your back, it's pretty much a wrap. So Barboza wants to avoid that. And typically speaking, outside of the Khabib fight for Barboza as well, I mean, everybody's failed to really dominate Barboza on the ground. So if you're able to get Barboza to the ground, he basically finds his way back up to the feet. So you can't keep him there again, other than Khabib. So I think Lee might have some success doing that. I mean, outside of Khabib, he might be the other guy that's able to control and possibly have some success if he doesn't get the sub with Barboza on the ground. But part of me doesn't think that's going to happen. I think the Barboza is going to be able to fend off the takedown attempts, or if he does get taken down, bounce back up to his feet, cage walk, and get back to the feet and gets where he wants to be. And on the feet, Barboza is definitely the better striker. So this is another one that I could go back and forth on all day and make a case for either guy. I think if Lee's able to get the fight to the ground and implement his game plan, obviously he takes his back, he could sub and finish Barboza. But I think if Barboza is able to sprawl, brawl, keep this fight upright, he's going to knock Lee out. So I'll go against the grain, against the action that's coming in. I'll go back towards Barboza. I'm hoping that he's able to keep the fight upright and we see a beautiful performance, highlight reel type of knockout possibly coming from Barboza again as well. I mean, the guy's had an awesome career. He's one of the best highlight reels that UFC's had as far as striking goes on the whole roster. I mean, the guy's something special definitely on the feet. So hopefully it shows here. I have a lot of respect for Lee as well, but I just think Barboza probably catches Lee and puts him out in this fight. So my pick is Barboza to pull off the slight upset win.
This fight is just a unique stylistic matchup, striker versus grappler. Similar to Barboza's last fight against Khabib, where He needed to stay upright and land heavy strikes on the feet and just fight off of his back foot and just do some damage and try to put his opponent away before he got taken down. Now, against Kevin Lee, Barbosa is going to be in a bit of a different situation. He's facing somebody that has a much worse chin than Khabib. So if Barbosa can sit down on a good strike, I think he can hurt Lee and put him away. I mean, we saw Lee get finished off of a jab earlier in his career when he was, you know, standing and trading and, you know, getting a little too confident in his stand-up. But since then, Lee has been extremely aggressive, looking to get fights to the floor. He has tenacious top control, and he looks to just brutalize his opponents on the ground and just try to take them out as quick as possible. He doesn't waste a lot of time. So, I mean, you go back, and since that stoppage loss on the feet, Kevin Lee gets a first-round knockout, a second-round submission, second-round submission, first-round submission. I mean, he does not waste time. You know, this is definitely a guy that is dangerous. If he can get Barbosa on his back, Barbosa's going to be in trouble. And I think it'll be a bigger threat than even when Khabib was on top, because Khabib fights it a little more cautiously, looking to just maintain his position and doesn't open up quite as much until he really has his opponent on the back foot. So I think if Barbosa can do that damage early and keep Lee off of him, then there's a good chance that Barbosa knocks out Lee. But if Lee is able to get inside and dump Barbosa on his back, then there's a decent chance that Lee finishes Barbosa. So I don't think this fight goes to decision. Absolutely not. I think Kevin Lee is a guy that, with the aggressive style that he has, I think he needs to take Barbosa out quickly in the first or second round, because the longer this goes, I think the more likely it is that Lee will start to have a little bit of trouble with takedowns and Barbosa can hurt him. So I know Barbosa has had his chin issues as well, but I just don't think Lee is as much of a threat on the feet, especially now when he's looking to get fights to the floor as quickly as possible. So if Lee is telegraphing those takedowns too much, that's another thing. I mean, you look at what happened when Edson Barbosa took on Beneil Dariush. Dariush would throw a combination and then shoot for a takedown. And he, you know, set that up and kept doing it. Barbosa caught on to it, and then the second he threw that combination, Barbosa just blasted him in the face with a knee and got a brutal second round knockout victory. So, if Lee is telegraphing anything, he's going to be getting a knee to the face. If Lee is having trouble and, leaves his chin exposed, he's going to get punched in the face. So I think that there's a decent chance here that Edson Barbosa does catch Kevin Lee's chin and does take him out. So I'm going to slightly side here with Edson Barbosa, but it would not shock me if Lee shoots in and puts Barbosa down and gets a takedown and gets a finish from top position. But I think the more likely outcome here is that Edson Barbosa bounces back from the Khabib fight and all that defensive wrestling training that he's been working on over the last year. And I do think that he connects with Lee's chin and earns a stoppage victory. So Edson Barbosa will be my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 29. Now, if we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.